When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
It's Football Full Circle on a Tuesday to end out our second week of the 2024 NFL regular season. Looking back on the Monday night finale in Philadelphia, in all of our assessments from what we have seen through two weekends. And of course, Scott, at the end of one week, we already prepare for a new week in the National Football League and a ton of news to break down and digest and frankly debate on this Tuesday as well. Quarterback changes and a litany of injuries to go through around the National Football League. That is always our task here on Football Full Circle.
Boy, it is amazing, Ben, right? Week two in the books, and it's a laundry list of who's who that's injured around the NFL. It's amazing. You put together literally an all-pro team, right? We got controversy galore. We got upsets. Survivor pool players are no more. There's six more in my league went down with Philadelphia. Just a crazy. We've seen crazy weeks before. This is not the first time this week. But as far as the first 2 weeks combined, I don't remember too many years where we've had the craziness that we've had so far this season.
Yeah, Scott, a lot of underdogs have been barking, both covering numbers, keeping it closer than expected, and in fact, winning outright. Represented in what the Falcons did in thrilling comeback fashion in about 90 seconds last night in Philadelphia to steal a victory from the jaws of defeat. In fact, the Falcons, a 5.5-point underdog on the road in Philly for the Monday night finale of week number two. Now the 10th team this year that has been a 5.5-point underdog or greater in the opening 2 weeks of this NFL season. Those 10 underdogs getting at least 5.5 points, Scott, now 9-1 against the spread with five outright victories. On the Sunday slate in the early window, we saw three underdogs getting at least 6.5 points win outright. The Saints triumphant over the Cowboys. The Buccaneers triumphant over the Lions. And of course, the largest upset of the weekend, an 8.5-point spread in favor of the Ravens, not good enough to hold off the Raiders. Those NFC South teams as substantial underdogs, outside of Carolina, winning outright as a dog in week two. That's what happened last night in Philadelphia. Of course, Scott, the story of the game, really emblematic in the final 2 minutes. Under the two-minute warning, Atlanta burns their final time out. The Eagles have the ball on the Falcons' 10-yard line. It is 3rd and 3. Atlanta out of timeout, 1:46 remaining in regulation. What are the Eagles going to do? The wise thing would probably be run the ball, keep the clock moving. Even if you don't get the first down, you settle for a field goal, you make it a touchdown or six-point game, so the Falcons have to beat you with a TD. Instead, they call a pass play. Jalen Hurts rolls out to his right, and frankly, you can hate the call, but the result was there. Had Saquon Barkley wide open in the flat, could have walked to a first down to end the game in that moment. But Barkley unable to complete the catch, a drop that will haunt the Eagles after week two. It stops the clock with just under 1:40 remaining. Jake Elliott makes a field goal, puts Philadelphia up 21-15. After the ensuing kickoff, Kirk Cousins leads the Falcons on a 6-play, 70-yard, 65-second drive, capped off with a Drake London touchdown for the Falcons to storm all the way back in less than a minute and a half to steal a victory on the road in Philly. Again, the Falcons winning outright as a 5.5-point underdog, 22-21.
Yeah, a couple things. And this is going to get really into the minutiae of it, right? But that's what I love about the NFL. We can. First off, I have no problem them throwing the football, Ben. You're not going to get 3 yards down at the 10-yard line. More than likely, you're not, right? So you're going to settle for a field goal, which means you're going to be up 6, and you're going to hand Atlanta the ball with a full minute left. That's a lot of time. A minute left, so I have no problem. You get the first down there or a touchdown, you win the game, right? So no problem them throwing it. I know a lot of people do, but I think that's hindsight. I don't mind being aggressive at all. Here's the minutiae part. The play before, the series before, where we thought Barkley scored, right? But then the replay showed his knee hit the ground, which I really kind of have my doubts about replay, but whatever. What did that have in common with the play that Barkley missed? He's running towards his left, right? And this is where the minutiae comes in. He's right-handed, which means when you run to your left, your power hand, your right hand, is on top. Your catching hand is on the bottom. On the touchdown that was called back, he fell to the ground. Why? Because he's running the wrong way. Right-handers want to run right. That's why in hockey, right-wingers are right-handed. Left-wingers, for the most part, are left-handed. You want to run to your power side, which is to the right. He's running. They have him running to his weak side, his left. He caught the ball the first time, but he fell to the ground. No one hit him. He fell to the ground. That's why he didn't score. And then he dropped the ball. Same thing. Running to his left. His power hand is on top. His weak hand is on the bottom. And he drops the football. Is that too minutiae for you? I don't know. But I don't think it's a coincidence. I really don't. I mean, we've seen it happen with him as a Giant fan. We've seen him make that play. In fact, he even said in the post-game press conference, I reverted back to my old ways. Yeah, Giants have seen that plenty of times.
5 targets for Saquon Barkley, 4 grabs. That was the only target that was not converted for 21 yards. Saquon Barkley in his home debut in Philadelphia was really good. 22 carries for 95 yards. Very nearly a touchdown that came up just inches short, resulting in a rushing score via the tush push for Jalen Hurts, but still 116 scrimmage yards for Barkley after putting up 130-plus scrimmage yards in Sao Paulo. Of course, 3 total touchdowns, but the drop, that will plague him. And because of the drop, it gave Atlanta more time. But Scott, to your point, the Falcons didn't really need it. 1:05 to go 70 yards on only 6 plays to score that game-winning touchdown. And after Drake London scores, he gets flagged for an excessive celebration that makes the extra point a 48-yarder. But Younghoe Koo comes through in the clutch once again for the Falcons. Scott, like you, I actually like Nick Sirianni deciding to throw the ball there. It was a pretty risk-averse pass play as well. It was designed to go to Saquon Barkley. Of course, Kellen Moore, the offensive coordinator, who called the actual play. But we know Sirianni likes to be aggressive. We know they like to go for it in Philadelphia. Instill the confidence in your team to make a play and win the football game. I have no issue with that. What I have an issue with is why, for whatever reason, we continuously see this. When a team is up by what would be a touchdown, or the opposition would need a touchdown to beat them, they just settle back and prevent defense. They rush 3 guys, and they barely got to Kirk Cousins all night. And they allow their defense to be picked apart, chunk after chunk after chunk. And I thought Vic Fangio would not allow that to be the case for the Eagles last night. It was quite the opposite. Darnell Mooney on the left sideline was open basically every single play. On the Manning cast for Monday Night Football, they were breaking it down with the idea that Kirk Cousins in this new offense, in that 2-minute up-tempo drill, that's where he felt comfortable. Why? Because it's a shell offense. It's the plays that he knows, the basic installs. And he picked apart Philadelphia, leading to that game-winning touchdown for the Falcons. So Kirk Cousins gets a victory as an Atlanta Falcon for the first time. Scott, last year only played in 8 games, of course, rupturing the Achilles in that 8th game for the Vikings. But 2 years ago, when he led Minnesota to 13 wins in a playoff berth, he had 8 game-winning drives for the Vikings. That was the most in the National Football League. He put that on display. It's why the Falcons paid him this offseason. They went outright as a 5.5-point underdog to get a win that we did not expect pregame or really with about 2 minutes remaining in regulation.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't think it's overdramatic to say this is like a season-changing game for the Falcons, right? They got Kansas City next week. You go to 0-2 this week, you know, what are the likelihood you beat Kansas City, right? You're looking at 0-3, you kind of one hand how many teams start 0-3 and make the postseason, and now all of a sudden, you know, you got the fans calling for the backup quarterback and everything else. Instead, you know, they're calling Kirk Cousins a genius, and he's great, and he's this, yeah, and exercises all these Monday Night Football demons.
He is now 13-20 straight up in his primetime career, 4-10 on Monday Night Football. But Scott, to your point, the Falcons on Sunday night, week three, host the Chiefs. They're an underdog. Then it seemed like it was going to get easier, but now they got to take on the Saints and the Bucs, the two hottest teams in the NFC South. We'll talk about the division next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
So, Scott, as we do at the end of any week in the National Football League, we react, we have our swift takeaways. But we don't want to overreact. We want to make sure they are based reactions in what we see. Does it change our overall season outlook based on one result, based on only 2 weeks of a sample size for each individual team around the NFL? But you said it, Scott. Could it be a season-changing type of victory for the Falcons out of nowhere as a pregame 5.5-point underdog trailing by a touchdown with just over a minute and 30 seconds remaining in regulation? It seems like it, because the Falcons entered this season as the -140 odds-on divisional favorites in the NFC South. The optimism from the offseason and the acquisition of Kirk Cousins. He was the guy at the quarterback spot with the young, talented pieces offensively around that position with an up-and-coming defense, defensive-minded head coach in Raheem Morris that could bring the Falcons to double-digit wins in a division title. But that seemed to be slipping away in the first seven quarters of this season for Atlanta. They found something last night. Kirk, 20 of 29, 241 yards and two touchdowns, 70 of the 241 coming on that final drive that was the game winner. Bijan Robinson, great once again, 122 yards rather of total offense last night. Still yet to find the end zone this year, but the Falcons got a big victory for their overall season outlook, despite the fact it is just week two, now the end of it, entering week three.
Yeah, I tell you, more than anything else, I was impressed with the Falcon defense, Ben. You know, Philadelphia scored a couple of times, but the one drive was just basically Jalen Hurts scrambling. And listen, it counts on the scoreboard, don't get me wrong. But, you know, that's not okay running the ball, passing the ball, running the ball, passing the ball, moving down the field 70 yards and you score a touchdown. And that's just kind of flukiness for me. So I thought it was the Falcons defense that they kept them in the game. There were many times where Philadelphia looked like they were going to blow the doors off this thing and make it a 2-3 score game and be coast to a victory. And the Falcon defense came through. So held Pittsburgh, albeit in a loss, without a touchdown last week. So, you know, so far 2 weeks, all the emphasis has been on, you know, Kirk Cousins, and rightfully so, perhaps on the Falcon offense, but the Falcon defense is pretty good. I still think the Saints, I mean, listen, it's turned into, and I did say this, and you agreed, I believe, before the season began. Last year, this was a bad division. It was a fair, equal, balanced division, but it was four bad teams. This year, I think it's three pretty good football teams. I think it's just as balanced, but it's not balanced because the teams are bad. It's balanced because the teams can be halfway good. I mean, I believe in the Saints. Tampa Bay's won the division three straight times. If the Falcons hold their end of the bargain, that's going to be a tough division. It's no longer an automatic win. You face the NFC South outside of Carolina.
Absolutely so, Scott. And the Falcons had the second easiest schedule entering the year because they were the best team in what was perceived as a weak division. Hey, the Buccaneers, who have won the divisional crown three consecutive seasons, had a win total of 7.5. Same with the New Orleans Saints, who are the optimistic offseason team from a year ago that kind of floundered on that expectation. Of course, we'll get to those two teams and how they have already exceeded expectation early this season. So there's the good, there's the positive for Atlanta, Scott. There's also the negative outlook for Philadelphia. They still are 1-1. They still had an impressive victory in Sao Paulo, but there's a couple of concerning things in my estimation for this Eagles side. They were the second worst passing defense in the National Football League a season ago. One of the reasons, Scott, I bought back into Philadelphia was Vic Fangio. Boy, a lot of questions after the performance last night. Not only the final drive, but they gave up to Atlanta 152 yards on the ground. That was 5.4 yards per carry. They gave up more than a buck 60 in Sao Paulo. Field conditions weren't great in the Brazilian opener. Everybody was slipping and sliding everywhere. But the Packers still ran it for 7.8 yards per carry. Last year, it was Philadelphia's secondary. This year, it might be the front seven. Either way, the defense not all that stout this year in Philadelphia.
No. Two times last night, Sirianni, you know, kind of relied on his defense, right? First half, they go for it on fourth down instead of kicking the field goal. No doubt thinking, all right, even if we don't get it, we're going to keep them inside their own five-yard line. They don't get it. And what happens? Atlanta moves the ball. They don't score, but at least they move the ball deep from their own territory. And then at the end of the game, obviously, they're thinking the same thing. All right, we're going to take a chance. We're going to throw. We don't get the first down. Okay, we'll kick the field goal, and we're going to hand it over to our defense, you know, not having to give up a touchdown. And both times, obviously, the defense failed. So when does that flip, Ben? When does, you know, all the expectations, that great draft they had at the end of last year, last season heading into the year, getting all those Georgia guys, it was going to be the greatest defense in the world. When do we just accept the fact that this Eagle defense really isn't that good?
They're certainly not at this moment. And you thought with guys like N'Kobe Dean and Jordan Davis and, of course, Jalen Carter, who was a top 10 pick in 2023. Nolan Smith got decked last night as Bijan Robinson was helping out in some pass blocking. It has not been great for Philadelphia. Now, the Eagles are still a conference contender. They're still an odds-on favorite to win the NFC East. But Scott, the NFC East as a whole, as we'll highlight the success of the NFC South before we get to some big quarterback news in that division and, of course, in the National Football League, the NFC East is the only division of the eight around the National Football League without a perfect undefeated 2-0 team. Everybody is 1-1, or, of course, you're the Giants who are 0-2. Commanders 1-1, Eagles 1-1, and the Cowboys all at 1-1 at this moment. Philly remains the odds-on favorite at minus 140.
Yeah, it kind of lessens the pain if you're a Dallas fan, right? Of losing a game against the Saints, you're thinking, oh wow, 2 weeks in, we're already one game behind. Now you find out Philadelphia loses, and maybe you could kind of, at least I won't say justify, but just ease the pain a little bit of what happened on Sunday. So I still think it's going to be Philadelphia's division. I'm still going to buy in. We're going to find out how long A.J. Brown's going to be out, Ben. You know, he's on the sidelines telling the four-letter network, oh, yeah, I'm going to miss a couple of weeks. You know, that's news to the head coach who afterwards said, really? You know, I don't know about that. So more indications of discourse on that Philadelphia Eagles sidelines. But without A.J. Brown, you know, he's a mope. No two ways about it. But he's a pretty darn good mope. And there's a reason why he's the highest paid wide receiver in the game, or at least one of them anyway.
Yeah, Scott, we're starting to see that in a couple of spots. Calf, Achilles, hamstring injuries, even when they don't seem all that serious, you can only rest it. And it takes a while to get back to 100% full health to be able to be out there in any given NFL game. We'll talk NFC South and the big quarterback news in the NFL up next here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
The NFC South, it has our attention following week number two before we get to week number three. The Falcons stealing a victory with a thrilling comeback last night in Philadelphia over the Eagles. Kirk Cousins leads the Dirty Birds to his first win in a Falcons uniform. Scott, the two most impressive teams, I think you could argue, through 2 weeks, the Saints, the league's best scoring offense, the only team that has scored more than 70 total points in its first two games, and New Orleans got 91 in terms of their scoring output. And the Buccaneers looked really good in the home opener against the Commanders, cruising to a victory, winning outright as more than a touchdown underdog over the Lions on Sunday in the Motor City in what was a playoff rematch. So you've got the Saints and the Bucs at 2-0, and the Falcons now at 1-1. New Orleans is now the favorite to win the NFC South, plus 155. The Bucs back by less than half a buck at plus 190, but still 10 cents in front of Atlanta at a 2-1 number. Again, we'll get to Carolina in just a moment, but the Panthers bring up the rear at 72-1. We've got those three teams that you alluded to earlier, Scott, separated by less than half a dollar right now following 2 weeks, contending for what might be a very competitive race for that divisional crown.
Yeah, it's not a market I delve into too much, Ben, because the payoff just isn't worth the long wait. You know, it's not right. Like you're getting 3, 4, 5 to 1 on this stuff. But if you can, one good thing about FanDuel is they do allow you to put these in parlays. So if you're going to do that, then okay. But listen, it's a coin toss. I'm still going to land on the Saints. I'm not sold on them as much as I was last year. I was really sold on them last year. I kind of tempered my enthusiasm a little bit, but boy, you said it, 91 points. And realistically, they called off the dog second half against Dallas. Otherwise, they probably would have 100 points, to tell you the truth. So they look great. Their offense obviously looked great. Defense we know is solid. So I'm going to go. If I had to pick one, you want to put one in a parlay? You know, it may come down to goofy tiebreakers and everything else, but give me the New Orleans Saints.
I still think there is some value, Scott, on the Falcons. Again, the minus 140 odds on favorite entering the year. You might have not believed in that number because it was offseason optimism with Kirk Cousins, and that's very fair. I actually think the Falcons' defense looks pretty good, and the offense is only going to continue to develop with Kirk Cousins in-game action, in my estimation. So now you get the minus money favorite at a 2-1 number when they did pick up a huge victory last night on Monday Night Football. The one bet you will never make is Carolina at 75-1, at least. I don't believe that you will. A huge change at the quarterback position announced yesterday in Charlotte. Number one overall pick of the 2023 NFL draft, Bryce Young, is being put on the bench. The veteran, the Red Rocket, Andy Dalton, will take over as the team starter entering week 3. Scott, it's hard to describe what Carolina has endured this year in their first 2 weeks as anything worse than a disaster. But it's been exactly that. In fact, the year plus now with Bryce Young as the starter in Carolina has been exactly that, a disaster. It has been dreadful, miserable, and it was time for a change. Dave Canales, rookie head coach, only 2 games into his tenure in Carolina, making the decision. But it's not often that you see a number one overall pick benched 18 games into their NFL career.
It's amazing, but you could not have painted a worse picture for the Carolina Panthers, right? They bottom out. They make the trade up from number 8 to go to number 1, not number 2, but number 1 with the Chicago Bears, who had cost them the first round overall pick this past season. They take the wrong guy. The other guy is a superstar in the making, right? And you got the wrong guy. You fire the head coach, Frank Reich. You don't bring the interim head coach back. You bring in the quarterback guru who's going to turn things around, apparently, and you're already, you know, basically giving up after 2 games. Oh, by the way, a day after he said that, you know, Bryce Young was going to be his quarterback, you know, maybe he looked at film and decided maybe the GM came to him.
Yeah.
I really think, Ben, what happened was I think the players went to him. And I think the players just said, listen, we've been through this. We're not sitting through another 2-win football season. We're not winning with this guy right now. I really do think that happened. I think some of the veterans went to the head coach and said, listen, you got mutiny on your hand. This guy stinks. He threw for less than 100 yards again this past week. We're not winning with him. You got to put in Andy Dalton.
And I think that's where it is, Scott, right? The locker room still saying, hey, we're busting our tails out here. We know we're not the best football team, but we don't just want to cough things up just so we can see if this quarterback now in his second year has anything to muster up the confidence of a starting quarterback at this level, a professional in the National Football League. And I think Dave Canales might also recognize who he's working for, and that's David Tepper, the very temperamental owner of the Carolina Panthers, who might not give Canales the benefit of the doubt for being a rookie head coach with a project at the quarterback spot. Plenty more around the situation in Charlotte and Bryce Young's NFL future. That's next on FFC.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. I am Ben Stevens. He is Scott Wetzel. So, Scott, the big quarterback news from the National Football League as we get ready for week number three following week number two, the change in Carolina at the quarterback spot. Bryce Young on the bench. The veteran Andy Dalton takes the reins as the starter. Let's start with Bryce Young, of course, because he's the number one overall pick from 2023, the Heisman Trophy winner at Alabama in 2022. And yet here are where things stand, or 2021 rather, but here are where things stand for this guy in his National Football League career. 18 games started, a 2-16 straight up record. An underdog in all 18 of those games. In Carolina is now 3-13-2 against the spread as an underdog. They have not even come close to covering a number so far in 2024. In both games this year, Scott, less than 200 yards. In 11 of the last 12 for Bryce Young, dating back to last year, less than 200 yards. Just 84, less than the century mark in week number two against the LA Chargers. I could go on and on with how dismal the statistical outlook is, with how bad the production has been for Young in Carolina offensively this year or last year, Frank Reich or interim head coach or Dave Canales. It does not matter. The numbers bear it out. It's been a disaster in Charlotte. And I'm not entirely sure, Scott, what the future holds for Bryce Young with the Panthers or in the National Football League.
Yeah, I made the prediction, and I'll stick with it, that he won't be on an NFL roster next year, at least not on an active squad, maybe a practice squad somewhere. But I don't see it. I don't think they can. Listen, if the Bears could only get a conditional fourth-round pick for Justin Fields, you know, what do you think the Carolina Panthers would get if they put Bryce Young on the open market? Probably nothing,
Yeah. Honestly.
You know, my favorite little stat is that the Panthers, despite two wins last year, have yet to snap a play in the fourth quarter with the lead, because the two wins came on last second field goal. So they've yet to even have a lead in the fourth quarter, Ben. I mean, you mentioned 20 straight games, 29 out of 30 listed as an underdog. Three head coaches now in less than a year. You know, if you're Dave Canales, you're thinking, all right, you know what, I can survive this year, right? Well, go tell that to Frank Reich. He didn't survive. You got an owner who wants to win. The only saving grace, I suppose, in the whole situation is, supposedly, if you believe the stories, Tepper, the owner, is the one that wanted to draft Bryce Young, not C.J. Stroud. So, you know, I don't know when they come to the realization that he's not it, but I guess you start him as they did. You play him a couple of games. He fails as he did. You bring in Dalton. I don't know if they're going to be a playoff team or anything goofy like that, but somewhere along the line, you got to figure Bryce Young's got to get one more crack at this thing, right? Whether it's week 10, 11, 12, you have to look at the bye schedule. He's got to get one more crack at this thing. And then if it doesn't happen, you know, you got to start afresh. You know, whether he's on your roster or not, you certainly got to draft another quarterback next year.
And right now, Scott, they might be drafting first overall for the second time in the last 3 years, and they had the worst record last year at 2-15. It would have been the team drafting first overall had they not traded that pick, of course, to the Chicago Bears. So let's think about what was given up for Bryce Young as the Panthers moved up from 9th overall to first overall back in 2023 to get Bryce Young out of Alabama. DJ Moore, one of their top playmakers offensively in the last 5 years, dealt to Chicago. He does not seem to be all that happy, by the way, with Caleb Williams as of this moment. But hey, DJ Moore, a top playmaker for Carolina, now in Chicago. The first round pick that the Bears used on right tackle, Darnell Wright, also another guy struggling to adjust in the National Football League. A second round draft pick that year, Tyreek Stevenson, a cornerback. Then the first overall pick, of course, in 2024, Caleb Williams, and now a second rounder still outstanding that will be utilized by Chicago in 2025. That's how much Carolina gave up for Bryce Young to 18 games into his NFL career, now be riding the pine. What a confidence blow for a Heisman winner, for a guy that had incredible success at Alabama, that only knew success with the Crimson Tide. I don't know, Scott, what his NFL future holds truly beyond this season. If he will be a trade piece, if there will be any incentive for another NFL organization to even take a shot on Bryce Young. But what we can say right now, it has been a disaster. And I think your point about David Tepper, the owner, maybe wanting Bryce Young more than C.J. Stroud, is going to rear its ugly head and might speak of kind of the continued spiral Carolina is going to be in with an owner that is too involved and a little bit too temperamental, as we have seen. Of course, I still reference the clip at Ohio State's Pro Day of Josh McCown, then the quarterback coach under Frank Reich with Carolina, speaking to C.J. Stroud, who loves to play basketball, and mentioning that when he got to Charlotte, when he got to Charlotte, they would organize some runs with the team to only select Bryce Young, who, of course, will have his career compared to C.J. Stroud, who was the fifth rookie quarterback ever to throw for more than 4,000 yards, who ran away with the Offensive Rookie of the Year award in 2023, led his team to double-digit wins, led his team to a divisional title, led his team to a playoff victory, and now you have Bryce Young benched just two games into the 2024 season.
Yeah, and you know C.J. Stroud's going to be good, right? You throw on top of that if Caleb Williams is going to be good, the guy that they could have drafted had they not made that trade or you know, at least not giving up the number one overall pick. I mean, that now you're really adding salt to the wounds, right? I mean, it just gets worse and worse from Carolina. As I don't blame him for trying year number two, Ben, with Bryce Young, even though he was awful last year. But okay, maybe it was the head coach. Maybe, you know, GM gets fired, oh, by the way, as well. Say you bring in a quarterback guru as your head coach. I'm going to give him a pass for coming back this year, but they can't possibly do it next year, right? And they ought to just cut ties completely and just say it's a lost cause. We tried, we failed. Let's just move on, bring in a new face here. That's why they're better off. I mean, you hate to say it, but you know how it goes in all sports, really. You're better off being really, really lousy, getting a top 1, 2, 3 pick than you are having Andy Dalton come in, you know, win a bunch of games, get 6, 7 wins, and be drafted 10, 11, 12 when you're not going to have the pick of the litter. I don't know what you're accomplishing outside of just, you know, you got to appease the veterans, though, on your team.
And Scott, Carolina did not enter this season with the lowest win total, the worst win total in the National Football League. They had a 5.5 win total. The over had the juice. It was the Patriots who had the lowest win total at 4.5. Even the Broncos had a win total of 5.5, and the under had the juice. Now Carolina has that lowest win total in the National Football League at 3.5. The Patriots up to 6.5. The Broncos remain at 5.5 with the under having the juice. The Giants have slipped to that second worst win total currently in the National Football League at 4.5. So there is a good chance, just based on the odds makers here, at least after 2 weeks, that Carolina does end up with that number one overall pick once again.
Would you bet that, Ben? I mean, you want to talk crazy, right? Gambling show. I mean, Andy Dalton is an upgrade, right? Anybody would be an upgrade. So can they get 4 wins with what's left on their schedule with Andy Dalton? Maybe.
You know, Scott, what's so fascinating is Andy Dalton, 36 years old, of course, a ton and ton of NFL experience for numerous teams. Carolina is his fifth NFL franchise. He is a 3-time Pro Bowler, his last Pro Bowler, though, with Cincinnati back in 2016. All of that to say, we talk about Dave Canales, and the reason he maybe got the job in Carolina is because of what he did last year resurrecting Baker Mayfield in Tampa, what he did as a part of the Seattle staff that worked on the offensive side of things in 2022 in Seattle to help Geno Smith become the comeback player of the year for the Seahawks. He wasn't the passing game coordinator or even the quarterback's coach. He was the wide receiver's coach, but still a part of that in the Seattle meeting rooms. There's a chance that he makes Andy Dalton look pretty serviceable. And if he's throwing for 85 yards next week in Las Vegas, that's better than what Bryce Young did last week at home against the Chargers. I'll tell you this, Scott. I'm not going to bet the Panthers win total. I am going to take the 5.5 points with the Panthers on the road against the Raiders on Sunday. Just feels like a spot where they at least cover a number for the first time this season. Injury news elsewhere around the NFL comes your way next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Scott, every offseason, when we talk about the National Football League and we debate a team's future outlook, whether it's a win total, a divisional price, a conference championship number, or heck, to contend for a Lombardi Trophy and win a Super Bowl, we often, even without recognizing it, probably throw in the caveat, as long as everybody stays healthy, or as long as this guy's not too injured, or this guy bounces back. And then you see things happen 2 weeks into the year and you go, man, this is why we say what we do. First and foremost, we start with the Los Angeles Rams. Their injured reserve list might be full by the time we kick off in week number 3. Puka Nacua already on the IR. Notable offensive lineman flirting with it. And now Scott, Cooper Kupp, who exited the blowout in the desert against the Cardinals on Sunday with an ankle injury. Sean McVay saying yesterday they expect that Cooper Kupp will end up on the IR as well, along with starting offensive guard Jonah Jackson and defensive back safety Josh Johnson III. To join Nacua, to already have O-linemen who might not be IR eligible, but who have not yet played this season. It's going as bad as it could to start for the Rams, who are 0-2 with two road games to start the year. And what's the reward? Returning home to SoFi for the home opener on Sunday as more than a touchdown underdog against the NFC favorites, the San Francisco 49ers, who, oh, by the way, have their own injury concerns we'll discuss in just a moment.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, they get their own issues, right? And you begin to wonder, you know, if it's not going to happen for the Rams, who we thought, you know, maybe could upset the apple cart in that division. Clearly, San Francisco has some issues. I don't know. You put a little flyer on the Seattle Seahawks. They're still 3-1 to win the NFC West. They're the only ones in that division that don't seem to have any injuries. So, yeah. You know, at 3-1 right now, those odds might come down a little bit depending on what happens this weekend. So, yeah, I mean, and you're talking about a head coach in Sean McVay, Ben, that really doesn't take the preseason seriously. You know, he's one of the head coaches that, you know, is known for not really playing their starters at all. And what has he gotten them? You know, a banged up offensive line where, guys from Topeka High could be starting right now. Their two best offensive weapons are hurt. You know, it's all you might. Things are so bad in Los Angeles. They're down 31 this past week against Arizona with 4 minutes left. And they weren't confident enough with their backup quarterback. They actually had Matthew Stafford, who's as injury prone as anyone, to run out the final 4 minutes. Now, he just handed the ball off. They didn't, you know, throw any play. But still, right, you're down 31. With 4 minutes left, you get everybody out of there. But that's how wounded they are. That's how, you know, they don't have any confidence in their backups. It's, you know, for a team, like I said, that we thought maybe would upset the apple cart there in the NFC West. Boy, it is looking real ugly for the Rams.
Scott, it's very reminiscent of 2022, sadly for LA. The main injury story that year was Matthew Stafford, the nerve issue with his neck, but it was a Rams team that won a Super Bowl on its own home turf in SoFi in LA in the 2021 NFL season, Super Bowl 56. They had the worst Super Bowl hangover statistically in NFL history, at least record-wise, 5-12. Sure, an extended game, a longer regular season for the second time for a Super Bowl champ. But with that being said, they still were the only team to never even get to at least 6 wins after winning a Super Bowl. Matthew Stafford was injured. Cooper Kupp was placed on IR. Aaron Donald, who is no longer there, dealing with injuries. Jalen Ramsey in the secondary. The list went on in 2022. It was part of the reason, Scott, that to start last year, I was confident about the Rams going over their preseason win total of 6.5. Just if Matthew Stafford could remain healthy, I thought this team could win 7 games. And sure enough, they did. They won double digits. They made it to the postseason and gave the Lions a run for their money in Detroit. So there was the thought, hey, once again, Stafford remains healthy. You got Cooper Kupp now back, who was dealing with lingering issues injury-wise last year. And Puka Nacua, after a rookie record-setting season at the wide receiver spot, this team's going to factor into the playoff race again. Updated win total for LA, 6.5, and there does not seem to be a ton of optimism. So again, home opener in Los Angeles, they're a 7.5-point underdog. Whoa, that's a lot although we've seen the underdogs look pretty good through the opening 2 weeks. But San Francisco comes in as the favorite, and the 49ers are still the favorites to win the NFC. But the Niners got beat outright on the road in Minneapolis last week by the Vikings. They were a four-point favorite. The reason they got beat outright, or at least the line was only four, Christian McCaffrey on the IR. And we got the news yesterday from Deebo Samuel that he's got a calf injury that is expected to sideline him for a few weeks. Will he be placed on injured reserve? That remains to be seen. But, Scott, he's not going to play Sunday in Los Angeles, probably not in the next few weeks after.
Yeah, I mean, that's Brandon Ayuk's going to have to step up, right? You throw in Ricky Pearsall, still out. He's trying to recover from being shot, you know, a couple of weeks ago. So this would have been a spot where you thought, okay, our first-round draft choice, let's have him step right in. So it's the walking wounded in San Francisco. Now, fortunately, the running back, you know, that's filling in for McCaffrey ran for another 100 yards, but it's not the same. Mm-hmm. It's not Christian McCaffrey, right? You have all those weapons, and now you're being limited. So I'm fascinated that they're a full touchdown favorite. Now, they own the L.A. Rams. Rams never beat them, but the fact that they're a full touchdown favorite on the road, that's a little – I think it's a lot of – listen, the Rams' offensive line is atrocious, and the San Francisco defense should be able to step up. I thought they were really embarrassed this past week against Minnesota, giving up, among other things, a 97-yard touchdown pass. I do think San Fran wins, but – this is some interesting games. You know, are the Rams going to be 0-3 or is San Francisco going to be 1-2? You know, is Dallas going to be 1-2 or the Baltimore Ravens going to be 0-3? There's a couple of key games like that, Ben, that really are just like, wow, moment. And you talk about week three being important. It is for a lot of these football teams.
Yeah, it certainly is, Scott. We know that the Bengals, who have now started 0-2 for a third consecutive season, are trying to drag themselves out of yet another hole to see the postseason. I'm pretty sure on the Monday Night Football Countdown show right before the game last night in Philadelphia, I heard Scott Van Pelt say of the last 41 times a team has started 0-2, only two have made the postseason. That would include the Bengals back in 2022. So 0-3 might be a death blow. In terms of Kyle Shanahan head-to-head versus his friend in Sean McVay, Shanahan has won 10 of those 15 matchups outright. And again, the Rams more than a touchdown underdog. The only good news, underdogs have at least 6 points this year, a perfect 8-0 against the spread. So yes, maybe LA keeps it closer than the odds expect. We'll talk a little bit more about some more news around the National Football League up next here on FFC.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle for just a few more moments. Scott, as you said, as we already look ahead to week number three, a couple of games on the horizon that really are going to dictate how this season plays out. You mentioned what we expect to be one of the better games of the afternoon window on Sunday. It's the Cowboys at the Star hosting the Ravens. Baltimore 0-2. The loss week two is an 8.5-point home favorite against the Raiders, much more damning than even following in the season debut to Kansas City. The Cowboys got shellacked at home last week by the Saints, allowing 44 points and snapping a 16-game regular season home winning streak. They're at home, Scott, and it's only 1.5-point spread, but the Ravens a favorite, laying 1.5 on the money line, minus 112, as opposed to Dallas at minus 104.
Yeah, that is amazing, right? I think really, Ben, that's just a bunch of people, myself included, what's easy to accept? Dallas being 1-2 after the way they performed against the Saints? Or are the Ravens really going to be 0-3, right? I mean, I don't know the last time a reigning MVP has been 0-3. I don't know if it's ever happened, to tell you the truth. I know you got to go back to like 2000, the last time he started 0-2, and that would be obviously Lamar Jackson. So but it's tough. That Raven defense, boy, I tell you, give the Raiders credit. I watched a lot of that game. I had the Ravens in my survivor pool, which obviously went up in smoke. They moved the football down the field three times in the fourth quarter, begging the Ravens defense to make a stop. They didn't. So you got to figure Dallas is going to be in a bounce back mode. But You know, 0-3, you know, and if Pittsburgh should win at home against the Chargers, you know, the Ravens would be three back. It's amazing. You know, yeah. Kansas City, you know, we're all talking about who's going to upset the Kansas City this year, right? Well, they already got a 2.5 game lead over their two chief competitors, Baltimore and Cincinnati, since they'd win the head-to-head tiebreaker if it came down to a tie record, you know, for home field advantage in the playoffs. So, I'm going to probably go with Baltimore just because, I find it harder to believe they're going to be 0-3. I can accept Dallas being 1-2. It's Dallas. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah. And even with how good they have been at home during the regular season, it would still be a statement for the Ravens to go on the road and win outright. And that's basically what the line is asking for the flock to do right now. Scott, only one team since the year 2000, the 2018 Houston Texans, made the postseason after starting the year winless 0-3. No Super Bowl champion, which was the expectation entering 2024 for Baltimore, has ever started a season 0-3. And to clarify the 0-2 numbers I gave out on the Bengals, since the NFL playoffs expanded to 14 teams, 7 making it from each conference with the expanded and third wild card team, we have only seen 2 of 32 NFL franchises that have started the year 0-2 make it to the playoffs. The Bengals in 2022, the Texans last year in 2023, just 5 of those 32 teams that started 0-2 in the last 5 NFL seasons, or at least the last 4 entering this year will be the 5th year, have even posted a winning record. So already being winless 0-2 is a lot of work you have to do to climb the hill to even get back to having an above 500 record when all is said and done.
That is amazing. Now, listen, we got one more game now at 17 that we had in most of those years. So you got a little bit more leeway there. But still, I mean, 0-2, I mean, that's nothing, right? I mean, you would have thought we expanded postseason, 5 zillion teams making the playoffs. I would have figured it, I heard those numbers, but I'm still amazed that I would have thought it would have been a lot more than that. Got some good teams, right? You used to Cincinnati and Baltimore at the head of the list that are 0-2. You tell me neither one of those two teams are going to make the playoffs when everything is said and done? I find that hard to believe. I think you're going to get a few this year.
Based on the numbers, Scott, not looking good. Pretty much every team in the AFC South, except for Houston, who is 2-0, is 0-2. The Colts, the Jags, and the Titans all winless. The Broncos, 0-2. The Giants, 0-2. The Panthers, 0-2. That was maybe expected. The Rams being winless 0-2, not necessarily the best sign for L.A. Scott, here's a really interesting game as well that I think will tell us a lot. The Cardinals, 3-point home underdog against the Lions on Sunday out in Arizona. 52.5, it's the highest total of the entire Week 3 slate. Arizona last year, an underdog in all 17 games, 9-8 against the spread in year number 1 with Jonathan Gannon. They covered by the hook, although they blew a 2-touchdown lead in Buffalo week number 1. And of course, they absolutely blew out the Rams a week ago. Detroit looking to bounce back after suffering a loss to Tampa Bay. An intriguing game in the afternoon slate.
Yeah, and Jared Goff, 2 interceptions, went back to the old Jared Goff. What's he going to do against Kyler Murray? That should be interesting. High-scoring game, you would think.
At least out in Glendale, he is still playing indoors. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. Football Full Circle returns on Sports Grid Radio tomorrow, noon Eastern time, right here on FFC.